It's one of the biggest hits of all time, which was extraordinarily good news for the fine folks at Reese's Pieces. It's E.T., the extraterrestrial, and for like a whole damn year, it was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hello, my name's Sean Collier. This is the number one movie in America, and I'm joined by two Harvard students learning an important life lesson. It's Robin Hitchcock.
Hello there.
And Camila Adams.
Hi.
But that's not all. Robin, tell us what else is going on.
Today we are also joined by a returning guest and friend of the show and generous supporter of the arts, Addie Twigg.
Yay.
Hi, Addie.
Hello, friends.
Welcome back.
Addie won.
Good to be back.
Addie won this guest spot for winning the silent auction item to support Arcade Comedy Theater, a nonprofit comedy theater here in Pittsburgh. And part of the deal with winning that auction item is that she also got to pick the movie that we talk about today. And she picked E.T.
Yeah, Addie, of course, is always with us singing our theme song.
It's true. You can't escape me.
Addie is on every episode that way. But you may remember Addie won the same prize a year ago, selecting Alien, which stands currently as our number two highest ranked film. I gave it an 89.5. This year, Addie sent me a list, and at the top of that list was E.T. Addie, why the extraterrestrial?
Well, I looked through the list, and I wanted to pick something I had never seen before. And I don't recall seeing E.T. I was too young when it came out. I mean, it was 82, right? And I was only 2 or 3 years old. So yeah, I wanted to pick something I hadn't seen. And this was a classic that I feel like I should have seen. Mm-hmm. I thought, all right, I'll just force it on everybody else on the podcast.
Thanks.
Make you watch it with me.
Yeah, I, you know, being born in 85, I literally don't remember a time without E.T. I can't tell you when I first saw it. It just seems to always happen. But I know I loved it and was affected by it as a child because it has such a great sense of adventure, but is also scary and so heartfelt. Like it certainly had a big impact on me early on, as did The Ride. We'll get into The Ride. And I feel like it's one of the rare movies that I've kind of checked back in with at every stage of my life and always been happy to do so. Robin and Camila, your E.T. pasts?
Mine is very similar to yours, Sean. I don't really remember the first time I watched this. I haven't watched it in a long time. I think I watched it last time when I was in college, which was almost 20 years ago. But yeah, watched it a lot growing up. Love it.
I was 6 when this came out, and I remember seeing it in the theater. But I also, apparently, like, I was unaffected by this because I recall, like, I walked out of the theater and I had, like, first of all, watching this again is only the second time I've ever watched it. And I had no memory of anything that happened, really, other than, like, 1 or 2 scenes, maybe. And wow. Then, and I had, like, no E.T. toys or anything like that. Like, I was not affected by this E.T. in any way, shape, or form as a child. And I almost kind of stand by my 6-year-old remembrance of this or a review of this film. So
so you are wow. Not an E.T. super fan.
No, no.
Okay, E.T. phoning it in, am I right?
Am I right, eh?
Where I have E.T. toys now.
Of course you do.
The little kit right over there. It's still on the. Later on, I'll show you. There's 2 pictures on my fridge of me with E.T. We'll get to that later. But I don't want to delay any longer. In the event that some of you besides Addie have not seen this before, odds are low, but not zero. Let's recap what happens in E.T. the Extraterrestrial. By the way, no colon. That is one run-on title, E.T. the Extraterrestrial.
Oh, I thought you meant E.T. has no colon because he's an alien.
He is a colon.
He's not. We don't know. He's not, by the way, I don't know how we gender E.T. because it has been established canonically that he is neither male nor female. He is closer to a plant.
Wait, what?
That's
when is that established?
He's a penis.
Oh, there is a lot of E.T. lore that does not appear in this film.
That is not what canonical means. Canonical means it's in the actual film. Word of God is Steven Spielberg saying that he has no gender, he's a plant. I'm pushing my glasses up. But that is in my notes. It's don't misgender E.T.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, it really should be they. I guess we can say he because they do in the movie. The point is, I'm delaying
Elliot
the...
Right. Insists early, like he's adamant that E.T. is a boy. And then Gertie is like, well, I'm going to dress him up in my girl clothes. And E.T. likes it. So listen, sure gender does. Is a fluid concept.
that may not exist on E.T.'s planet.
Right.
Very true. They all kind of look the same, like, not to sound racist, but all the aliens do kind of look the same.
I don't know. He recognized Yoda.
Oh, I have a spiel about that. But so much to cover. But let us not delay a very special 60-second recap from Addie Twig.
So here's the thing. I wanted to pick a song from 1982 to use as my parody base, and I did, but the song that I picked does require more dynamic vocals, I guess I'll say, which is my way of saying that I have to get really loud to hit some of the notes. Mm-hmm. So I recorded it really quick just so that I wouldn't have to sing it live and have it like blast everybody out, and because who knows what would happen.
Right.
So I want to spare your ears. So I'm going to just play the clip. It's not like mixed or anything. I literally just like one take, you know, so it's not perfect, but
neither is the whole show.
I just want to be honest that it is pre-recorded, as I'm not singing this live. And I also want to warn you, it is not going to be within 60 seconds.
Okay.
So I'm going to steal back some of that time that I didn't use last time.
There you go.
Use that on my non-60 second recap.
Spaceship intrigues, glowing hearts, funny grunting. Suddenly chased by the man with the keys, just one poor creature gets left behind. Elliot has Reese's Pieces candy lured into his closet. It drinks a beer, now the boy's drunk dancing. Free the frogs just to keep them alive. It's the extraterrestrial, or E.T. for short. He's a spaceman, he's not a fucking goblin. And the extraterrestrial can make objects float. Now we're speaking spells our satellite for home phoning. Shriveled up, E.T.'s pale and dying. Elliot too, it's symbiotic. Elliot lives, but E.T. R.I.P. O.J.K., he just came back to life. With the extraterrestrial, they're riding a bike, rising up to escape government rivals. And the last long goodbye is making everyone cry, but E.T. will be right here inside. Hark, hackles. Inside our hark, hackles.
That was amazing.
Excellent. Please keep winning auctions, because it's just this weekend. Or, you know, we'll just text you and be like, hey, it's Fight Club this week. If you have a Fight Club song, please.
And then eventually you can release an album.
Right.
You can release a number one movie in America album.
I like it.
We'll sell that on all the live events we may or may not ever have. that about covers it. And the one, you know, no matter how many times I see it, the thing I forget is that E.T. gets drunk, which gets Elliot drunk, which leads to the frog riot. and drunk Elliot eyeing up a pretty girl in class and then kissing her consensually. It was very nice. It's a nice moment.
Is it ever?
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. Yeah. I'm not even sure if Elliot consented to that.
Yeah, agreed. He's like, he's weirdly spiritually connected to drunk E.T. watching an old movie.
Why?
Right? He's like recreating the scene in the old movie.
And like, that's actually my only real gripe about this movie, because like, you could have done anything with that idea. Mm-hmm. You could have done literally anything.
Right.
And you chose to make a child drunk.
Right.
And like, the whole frog thing was great. I love that.
The frog thing.
But, and the dancing was cool too, but like the kiss and the drunkenness, I just was like, you could have done literally anything else.
I mean,
and it's the little girl turning her foot in, getting like lingered on, is, excuse me, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's all very skeevy. And again, you know, 1982, apparently we were playing really fast and loose with like how we saw kids and whatnot. You know, little Gertie, 5 years old, you're okay to stay home, right? You're okay. You're cool.
Yeah, that whole thing.
I was so scandalized. And then I thought back and I was like, I 100% got left home alone when I was like 2 years older than that.
And I also was just like, but why do you have to pick up Elliot without her? It doesn't make any sense.
Right.
Because just take her with you. Like, she's your child. Have a car seat for her.
And then also, there's never a conversation about why, like, mom was like, why, how were you drunk?
Yes.
Picks up the beer can and smells it and is like, did I get wasted last night?
Yes. Everything surrounding that.
She's going through a rough time.
Well, this is, you know, another one of those 80s movies where, you know, mom is abandoned by dad. And I feel like there's like this huge theme, like in the last 10 movies or something, and it's all been wrapped up with a generation of men raised by women from Fight Club.
I have no problem with any of this.
I know, Sean, I'm a little concerned of like any criticism of E.T. I feel like is taking scales off of Sean's soft underbelly.
Yeah, I see like a little heartbreak every little bit in his face.
It's two things. One is, as much as I love this, this is not like one of my movies. You know, this is not, you know, when a much earlier version of this show did a top 10 favorite movies, you know, E.T. was not something I like considered. It's not a thing I watched again and again and again. Also, I am more so than usual convinced that y'all are wrong. Like, I'm also, and with a lot of things, I'm like, oh, yeah, and, you know, I think, yeah, I'm being a little too gentle on it. With this one, I'm like, no, I don't think so. I think the drunkenness is the most effective way to shorthand illustrate that they are now physically bonded as well as mentally bonded.
But why?
Right, I think that my question more is, what is the point of their physical and mental bond? And then the thing that keeps this movie from being a 100 for me is E.T. dies and then undies, and it's completely unclear biologically what has occurred.
Right. Yeah,
that was another question I had, was like, even biology aside, like, what's the magic? Is it because Elliot says, I love you? Or is it because the spaceship is on the way back? Like,
adults went away? Like, there's so many things that could be going on.
Yeah.
And like, they've switched out of the childlike perspective. Like, so I was watching this with Colin and I was like, you know, talking to him about like, you might notice that none of the adults have faces except for the mom, like blah blah blah, here's some filmmaking magic tricks. And that all breaks down once the feds come in, and he was like, well, why are they abandoning that storytelling device now? And I'm like, I think because his innocence is lost. But honestly, more realistically, it's plot reasons. And then once you start thinking, like, once you say, oh, for plot reasons, the third act of this movie gets a lot of for plot reasons. That's my feeling.
It's a good illustration of the fact that if you have enough goodwill, like I do, you can, that's when you can either choose to explain things or not. Why does he die and come back? Because he's a plant, which is illustrated by the fact that the plant is clearly dead and he brings it back. Their biology works differently.
Okay.
He can be revived essentially by the power of people they are bonded to. He comes back not because Elliot loves him, but because his family is getting close. But while I have an explanation for all of this, that you can either take it or you don't. I mean, if you're very friendly, you can go, oh, this, and this. And if you're skeptical, you could say, that sounds like plot reasons. And hey, it's subjective. That's
plot reasons are still reasons.
Yeah. Well, let's do some facts before we have eight other rounds of people ask a question and I go, because of this! E.T. was released June 11th, 1982, the 10th number one of that year. It won that first weekend with $11.8 million. That would not be its highest grossing weekend. In fact, each of the next five weekends, it made more than it did in its winning opening weekend. I'm not even doing the whole summary to say E.T. won its first six weekends, lost one to The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas. Then it won. Wow. Yeah, everything that beats it is like, wait, that one knocked it off? Because it won two more, then lost one to Friday the 13th, Part 3.
Those were parents then sick of going to see E.T. every weekend. Those were parents that are like, I can't watch E.T. one more weekend. And they all went out in droves and watched The Best Little Whorehouse in Town.
Or
like,
an officer.
I need some titties.
An officer and a gentleman took one weekend. It went on and on like that through the rest of 1982. In fact, coming back and winning Thanksgiving weekend. Remember, it came out June 11th. Then it won Thanksgiving weekend and the weekend after. Those were its 24th and 25th weekends of release. Throughout that year, it won a total of 16 different weekends. That is a record that stands today. What about Titanic? You say Titanic won 15 different weekends.
Wow.
It dipped out of the top 10 sometimes in early 1983, but there are still weekends in early 1983 when it was 7th or 9th. In fact, it was in 13th place on July 5th, 1983. That would be its 52nd weekend of release. So it was in theaters and doing well nonstop for a full year, ending that run with $359 million domestic. At the time, that was the all-time record. That was the highest gross of all time. It held that record well into the 90s. It gets complicated here. The thing that knocked it off was the 1997 reissue of Star Wars. But by that point, E.T. had also had a reissue, so it gets a little fuzzy. Basically, E.T. was the number one top-grossing domestic movie of all time, more or less until Titanic. That first
worldwide
re-release was just,
or U.S. because I thought Jurassic Park was at some point.
Yeah, Jurassic Park took the it was the top grossing movie period until Jurassic Park took the worldwide title in 94.
Okay,
but for more than a decade there, it was the indisputable number one movie ever in terms of box office. The first re-release was 3 years later, July 19th, 1985. It got a big re-release, nearly became the number one movie in America again, reopened with $8.8 million in second place, losing by a bit to Back to the Future, which was having a similarly giant run at the time. That run earned it another $40 million domestic. There was a 20th anniversary re-release, March 22nd, 2002. That one opened in third with $14.2 million, made another $35 million total in that run. The 2002 re-release was a George Lucas-style extended edition with some scenes put back in and some improved visual effects.
And some walkie-talkies where there used to be guns.
They edited out all of the guns and handed them walkie-talkies because Spielberg felt weird about guns. It was after Columbine. He felt weird. No. Unlike George Lucas, very quickly Spielberg said, yeah, don't watch that version. Like, they released a 20th anniversary DVD that had both versions, but more like I have a more recent set than that that does not even include the extended version. Spielberg has kind of gone, that was a bad idea. I'm never doing that again. And thank you. We appreciate that, Stephen. So the domestic total is $435.1 million. Even unadjusted for inflation, that is 23rd place all time, fourth place all time among movies from the 20th century, behind only Titanic, Star Wars Episode 1, and Star Wars Episode 4. If you adjust for inflation, it is the number four movie of all time, behind only Gone with the Wind, Star Wars, and The Sound of Music.
Wow.
Yeah, in 2019 dollars, the gross would be just under $1.3 billion. Yeah, so a lot of people saw this is the point.
Except me.
Except
I do think Neil is onto something, though, that I do think a part of the reason this movie made so much money is that this is in the 80s and people didn't have VCRs and the Netflix and all the things that we entertain ourselves with now. So it was like Saturday morning comes up, kids like, mom, can we go see E.T.?
Right.
And if you say yes once every four times, you still see that movie eight times.
Right. I'm sure there's a lot of repeat offenders.
And that's why the top like 20, if you look at that inflation adjusted chart, are all from the 20th century, even mm-hmm. Endgame and The Force Awakens don't quite crack the top 20 when you adjust for inflation, because even in these incredibly high demand mega hits, you don't have people going four or five times like they did before the turn of the century.
Right.
Other measures are hard to verify. Supposedly, it has earned something like $300 million in home video sales, $1 billion in merchandise. It has sold more than 15 million VHS copies.
Wow. I had it on VHS. It was green.
Yes.
Oh, the actual tape was green?
The tape was green.
That was part of anti-piracy measures. They had very specific they had very specific fancy cases that both made it distinct and had little extra things that made it harder to copy.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
It won 4 Oscars, Robin.
I believe you said sound.
Yes.
It won score?
Yes.
Visual effects?
Yes, and we'll give it to you there. This was very early in the 2 sound award era, so it won sound and sound effects editing.
There you go.
Huh.
1-4 was nominated for 9. Nominated for Best Picture, lost to?
Gandhi.
Gandhi's wow. director and Richard Attenborough himself said, yeah, E.T. should have won.
Yeah. I don't think Spielberg got director, did he?
He did.
Oh, interesting. He usually doesn't.
Lost to?
Also Attenborough.
Lost to Gandhi.
Yeah.
The other three, do you know?
Screenplay?
Mm-hmm.
Editing.
Mm-hmm.
Cinematography.
Look at that. She's good at this, everybody. in fact, all 5 that it lost to Gandhi.
Yeah.
Gandhi.
Have any of you other than me seen?
No,
I have not.
And I've only seen it because of my ridiculous quest.
Yeah.
Who plays Gandhi?
Ben Kingsley, doesn't he?
Oh, that's right. Thank you.
Is it good?
It's pretty good. Yeah, I mean, like, you can see why people liked it, but, you know, it's also a long, slow movie about a really depressing subject.
Yeah.
Young Daniel Day-Lewis is in it. Sexy as hell. Mm. What's-his-face? John Ratzenberger is in it, dubbed over.
But he has the best voice. He's in every Pixar movie.
Exactly, right?
It did win Best Drama at the Golden Globes. Gandhi, not even nominated. Globes gonna Globes, or Globes used to Globes.
Yeah.
E.T. trivia is its own field of study, so I won't go too far into it. You may wonder why there's no sequel. Spielberg thought it would spoil it. They had it. I don't know if they had a script or a treatment for E.T. 2: Nocturnal Fears.
Boo.
No. Don't like that.
The idea was darker. They're like different aliens were going to kidnap the kids, and E.T. and his race were going to have to save them, and they got through it because obviously a lot of money was on the table, and Spielberg was like, no, we're not going to do this. The canonical sequel, okay, whatever. I don't know if I'm using canonical right or not.
Yeah.
The Spielberg endorsed sequel is E.T. Adventure, the ride at Universal Studios, California and Florida.
Oh.
Spielberg says that is an official part of the story. I have been on it many times. Anyone else?
No.
In short, you get on the bikes. There's like a cart full of bikes. And if you get in the front, E.T. is sitting in the basket in the front of your bike. And you ride through the woods and you take flight. And there's like a miniature town, so it feels like you're gliding over town. And then you end up on E.T.'s home planet. It is about getting to E.T.'s home planet because they need your help. And you meet lots of... It looks like... Labyrinth? No, not Labyrinth. It looks like the Dark Crystal a little bit. Like, it's like very, very psychedelic, like rocks, plants, mushrooms, water features. Mm-hmm. You see some other E.T. creatures. His teacher, Botanicus, is present. It's fantastic. E.T. says your name at the end, as long as you have a fairly common
name. Right, exactly. I was gonna
say,
yeah.
Would he say my name?
No,
he'd
probably say
Adi.
He'd say Kamel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When it first opened, you had to get like a little E.T. passport and scan it so that E.T. would know what name to say when you got to the end. The most memorable thing is Universal is great at smells, and the line They are. The line, it has the best line in the world. It's the line, like, goes through the woods, and you'll go past his little phone home device, and you'll occasionally see, like, flashlights in the thing. And it has a smell like nothing else in the world, which is why I have this 8-ounce Park Sense candle called Extraterrestrial Adventure, so that in my home I could smell like I'm on the E.T. ride.
That's funny.
What does it smell like?
It, you can't place it. It's very fresh. It's slightly floral. It's more just like wet, like the woods after a rain.
Okay. But very outdoorsy.
That's funny because as we were watching, Dan was convinced that E.T. was omitting his own smell. Like, and just like, why? How come mom was not aware of this thing, this creature beforehand? Because I feel like...
I mean, I asked that question many times.
There's so many, right? So many reasons.
Running back and forth through the kitchen, and she's just always looking the wrong way is very funny to me.
Yes. And when she knocks him over with the fridge door.
Again, she's going through a hard time.
She's going through something. Yes.
Mexico.
two more things, and then I'll stop. Yes. This takes place in the Star Wars universe. As you noticed, E.T. sees a child dressed like Yoda and recognizes him. That was a gag at first. George Lucas answered, apparently, in Attack of the Clones when they're in... I've never seen Attack of the Clones. When
I
they're
have,
in
and
the,
yes.
There's a couple
species
of E.T.'s.
Is present at the Galactic Senate.
Yes. So, officially, we are in the Star Wars universe, despite the fact... that they have seen Star Wars, meaning that within the Star Wars universe, Earth exists.
Sure. Take me on this journey.
It's a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. It's factual. It's just...
Yes.
Historical records.
Right, exactly. And finally...
Is E.T. a Jedi?
I bet there are members of E.T.'s species who are.
Because he can make stuff float. I mean...
Oh.
He had healing powers.
Okay, so he's force sensitive.
I quit.
There you go.
Probably hasn't gone through the training of a proper Jedi Knight, but has
the gift,
midichlorians.
Camila's score is dropping.
All right. Excuse me, I just got to do some quick calculations here. Hold on.
And finally, because I love it, E.T.'s name is Zrek. E.T.'s real name is Zrek, like Shrek with a Z.
Zrek.
Zrek. Okay. So it's,
I was
it's
hoping
Zrek
it'd be like Frank.
And they, them, if we want to be technical.
Okay.
So, that was a lot for me. I want to go to Addie first. Your first time coming to it fresh as an adult. What do you think?
I loved it. I loved it. I was crying within 5 minutes when he gets left behind.
Oh, heavens.
I know, right?
Sobbing. The suspense is incredible. The score is incredible. You had mentioned, Sean, earlier, something about it being scary. Totally agree. And it is, it's not just scary, it's also dark. I mean, this movie is dark. Like, when he's, like, in the ditch, and what's the brother's name? Michael?
Oh, God.
Michael finds him. And I do remember that scene, and I don't know if it's just because I had, like, seen, like, a little bit, a minute of it or whatever, or seen pictures of it, but, like, that is dark.
I thought
like,
that
he's just like,
like, because that raccoon looked like he was about to eat him, start eating him.
That, too. Like, it's so, so good. It's so moving. How, I don't think that Drew Barrymore could be any more adorable.
My God.
In this movie. It was insane to me how cute she is.
Right?
It was baffling.
There's a deleted scene. They don't let too many of them float around, but I saw one where Elliot's mother starts looking for Elliot and finds Michael and Gertie out trick-or-treating, but Elliot is obviously off. And she's like, "Where is he?" And Gertie just pauses for a second and goes, "I mean, why would Elliot go to the forest?" That's ridiculous. She's so
my God. And like
the best moments, child performance ever.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. And like the moments where she like it's like the first time she sees E.T. and she just screams.
Yeah.
But like it's just so she's just so cute and smart. Yes.
Also, give me a break. That's my favorite part of Drew Barrymore in this movie. I'm surprised Drew Barrymore did not get an Oscar nomination for this.
Well, there was like a whole thing.
So good.
Wasn't there like with the making? Like, you know, they yelled cut and they had to really calm down Drew and Henry Like they had to do a lot to like, they had to do a lot to like bring the kids back to reality. It's like, guys, it's okay. It's okay. Breathe. It's just an animatronic fucking puppet. Just bring it.
But can we please talk about the animatronics? Because that was the other thing I was going to say is like this puppetry is incredible. There are moving veins in E.T.'s hand in some of these shots.
Yeah.
Mm. And maybe that's like the visual effects, right? Maybe it's not puppetry. I don't know.
No, I'm pretty sure it's puppetry.
But it's incredible.
Yeah.
Like 1982.
Right.
This puppetry is incredible. And like the neck, whenever E.T.'s neck gets really long and like falls back down, like the walking, all of it, it just blew me away. It's so beautifully done.
Like the skin moving and like his head kind of pulses and stuff, like it really helps it look alive.
Yes.
Yeah. And it just very, I don't know. It's hard to say. I'm curious if you showed it to a child of today, how they would react to it. But because, you know, I grew up with E.T. being as real as it gets, you know, but like even as a cynical adult, like the illusion instantly works for me.
Yeah. And like, I mean, the effects, all of the effects are incredible. Like, I feel like the stuff that holds up the least is like the spaceship stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, well, honestly, I loved this movie. It was good. It was fantastic. Yeah.
Should acknowledge, because this is a thing I learned very recently, there are at least two actors occasionally playing E.T.
There's a person walking inside a suit.
There's a gentleman who passed a long time ago, Pat Billon, B-I-L-O-N, who was one of the smallest, shortest adults. He was like about 2'10".
Oh, wow.
With dwarfism, who occasionally played E.T. There's also another guy, and I can't find his name, but he was just at Steel City Con. A lot of the E.T. cast was at Steel City Con, who was missing his legs. And so in certain shots, they really needed someone to move like a human being. So they had this young man, I think he was a teen at the time. But all of that, as you said, is beneath this remarkable animatronic. Some of those shots from the revamped version do like digitally move E.T.'s face and give him like, you know, more expressions. And it's not as convincing as
It never is.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's part of what made Jurassic Park so great too. You know, like I know that they obviously use effects as well, but they also had animatronics and like, it's just so much better. The texture that you get with that, you can't, at least so far, we haven't replicated with.
Right.
Effects. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they're so good now that I can't tell the difference, but
no,
at least
I mean,
they are not.
Think about how people fucking lost their minds over Baby Yoda. It's because they made a puppet.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Yes. Yeah.
To your point about the darkness and the mood of especially the first act, one of my favorite sets in the history of movies is the interior of their house in the kitchen where they're playing Dungeons and Dragons at first and where they have dinner. And the creepiness outside of his house when he first starts hearing, it's so perfect. And, you know, I clearly love Spielberg, but I think he's in control of this movie like nothing else he ever did. He's playing it like the score is playing it. It's so restrained and so precise at all times, and is just, it's a masterpiece of mood as much as anything else.
I totally agree.
Now, for a contrasting opinion, Camila, what did you make of?
I don't know what movie I saw compared to what movie y'all saw, because I felt none of that whatsoever. Like for me, when I walked away thinking like that damn thing was totally unwatchable had it not been for Drew Barrymore. Like she was the one, she is what kept my attention. And Henry also, like he was very good. I didn't allow myself to get lost in it at all because I just had so many practical questions. Just the whole thing with like the Elliot and E.T.'s connection. I'm just like, it's just stopped me, right? Like, why? Mm-hmm. Why?
Yeah.
Why? What point does this have? And then also I kind of felt like I think the whole government involvement, I don't think that really did anything for the plot per se, because it's, I mean, I know that you have to give some sort. No, because E.T. dying, that was enough of a foil, I think, to make it be, to add urgency, to add the sympathy, to add, you know, the heartbreak and everything that they were trying to add without bringing in all these people for no damn good reason. Like, they didn't do anything. Like, he was already dying before they got there. He died while they were there. They didn't bring him back. they didn't help him. Mm-hmm. And then like they are going to take him off somewhere. He lives. He, you know, he's wakes back up or whatever. And Elliot and his crew take E.T. on to go find his family. And E.T. and Elliot found like made the contraption to call his family. So it's like the government, Peter Coyote and them, they didn't have anything really to do. Like, it just didn't make any sense to me. Like, why?
So
it was a whole lot of hullabaloo for nothing.
So here you are leading me to something. I wasn't sure if I was going to disclose this or not, but you've led me down the path and I feel like I must. I am on record with a bad opinion, which is that they were correct to turn those guns into walkie-talkies. And I made that argument really forcefully back in 2002 because I was saying that the way that they depict the feds when they come in, it's like first they're the boogeymen. Right. And then as soon as Peter Coyote starts talking and when he, Peter Coyote's so great.
Right.
And when he says, I've wanted this, like,
right.
This is a miracle. I wanted this too.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, these grownups are here to help.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I was like, part of the message there is that the government, we're from the government and we're here to help being an actually a good thing. And I was like, so then therefore they shouldn't be pointing guns at children. That is incongruous with the message.
Right.
But here we are in 2021 and I'm very cynical and I'm like, oh, no. The feds point and shoot guns at children all the time. That's like what they do. So I guess
even when they think they're helping.
Right.
Exactly. So I think that the adult cynicism angle definitely really, really makes the way that they treat those feds coming in and just being good guys who just want to help E.T. and they break containment because they want to all do CPR. Like that is a lot harder to swallow as a grown up.
Yeah. And
anyway,
they shouldn't have changed
the guns into walkie-talkies. I was wrong.
Yeah, I didn't even think about the whole, because I, to kind of bridge those two things together, Camila, I agree with you that the, I don't know if it's the tone, but like Peter Coyote, his whole thing of like, oh, this is a miracle and this is whatever. Like, I understand that they make you think he's a threat because there's tension there, right? And then suddenly it's like, oh, I want to help and I've been, you know, waiting for this my whole life and I've been searching for him because it's a miracle and blah, blah, blah. Even despite what you just described, Robin, which I agree with, that like the feds come in with guns, even when that's not the right, you know, approach. If you're a hammer, everything looks like a nail, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I even considering that, I don't think that, I'm not sure how to like phrase this, but I still don't think it made sense. Like, going back to what you were saying, Camila, that like, it's kind of like, wait, what? Like, it just doesn't make sense to me that's what Peter Coyote and the feds were. And also it's kind of like, okay, is Peter Coyote, who is he?
Right. Exactly.
He's just sort of like a bounty hunter.
Right. Yeah. Like, cause his spiel was, you know, I've been waiting since I was 10 years old. I was kind of confused. Like, okay, so does this mean like, Is he just saying, like, since I was 10, I've always believed there was extraterrestrials and there was other life forms out there. And I finally, you know, found it. Or when he was 10, he was visited by a Zork or an E.T. and, you know, never to be seen again. And he is
or
now
Grogu.
Yeah. Yeah. And
I
he is like seen
when
it
he was
now.
10, Grogu. His dad shipped off to Mexico and he had abandonment issues. And he was like, you know what would fix this? An alien visitor. And that's what's going on. He's like, oh, it worked for someone else.
Yeah, it just didn't make sense to me. Like, wait, I don't. Yeah. So I think I agree with you, Camila, that the whole government thing just wasn't needed. You know, even if they just kept the bits in the beginning, showing the men with the keys and the guns and whatever.
Yeah.
Because that makes sense. They're in the forest. They're, you know, chasing them. And that's how E.T. gets left behind.
But like the whole takeover of their house and containment
throughout the rest of the movie.
Yeah. And just like the whole containment of it. Like, how long did, first of all, E.T. was like with them for what, 4 days maybe? And like, how long did it take them to quarantine their house and shit? Like, and set up all their equipment? Like, my God. Like, they just,
kapow!
Like, there's like 150. People in this two-bedroom house.
Yeah, it also did
people who are like, oh, I'm preparing, I have to be able to defend myself in case the government ever comes. Watch E.T. okay? There will be astronauts in your living room before you can reach for the door.
Yeah, a full astronaut suit. Like, I will.
Because they don't know what kind of disease he has, and that's the easiest way to get.
But here's the other thing I was going to say about that whole thing is, like, actually took me out of it a little bit, and I could not suspend my belief enough to just watch the movie at the point where all of these, like, medical professionals were, like, treating E.T. Right. And I'm like, how would you know how to treat an alien?
Right. They're like saying things. I know. They're saying things like, you know, plasma and, you know, and like asking for all this. Yeah, like, how do you know what he has? How do you know that this like in saline
and he has DNA, but they also know he has extra nucleotides.
Yeah, like I just was like, I don't think you.
No, they did like all
they
of 10
like
minutes
they
of research.
Save him, but I'm like, I don't think you know how to. And obviously they didn't because he died.
Right. You did 10 minutes of research. Like, you tell us that he has DNA, but he's like some extra rumble. But you're trying to like save him with all this stuff and injections and things. And, you know, and how do you know like the defibrillator is not going to harm him more than like.
Maybe that was the point, right? I mean, maybe the point was. They couldn't save him because we don't know shit about these aliens.
That's right.
I see and acknowledge your issues and like them. You know, I think if you made this today, what's the actor's name?
Peter Coyote
would have a 30-minute backstory that would drag the plot down.
Yeah.
I'm happier without it.
Same.
You know, you don't have to answer everything. And I think that the dad would show up in the third act to. I appreciate saying, we are keeping this to where it needs to be and not answering every one of your questions and not delving into everything.
I kind of thought Peter Coyote and the mom were going to hook up.
Oh, he was flirting.
Peter Coyote is so weirdly sexy.
Yeah, it's awkward.
It is weird, but yes.
You know, obviously I'm going to defend everything, but it's a loss and regaining of innocence movie, right?
Yeah.
That's not a mystery. I think that we have to have the world of adults, the faceless, you know, world of adults, jump in and demonstrate, even with good intentions, if you lose that innocence, you can't keep the magic in the world. You can't keep a thing alive, even if you're being really earnest in your attempt to do so, if you don't have that sense of wonder. And when you can bring it back, if you remember what it's like. Spielberg says that, you know, he was a little grumpy about where his career was going. He wanted to get back to, you know, the perspective, that 10-year-old perspective that he creates from in a lot of cases. And as a disillusioned former 10-year-old white boy, I get it. I absolutely think that you can say, did we need all of this? There is a lot. And those two poor agents who got road rashed to death dragging behind the van.
My goodness.
Yeah.
20 minutes. But those are some of the scenes that burned themselves into my mind. The tubes and the people and everyone looming above him and how scary it was. Those are like some of my earliest memories of E.T. along with the Reese's piece.
Well, yeah, I remember being really, really scared during that part as a child.
I do not remember the whole turning ashy and like when they showed him when they showed him in the forest, like when old dude was going back to find him, I kind of screamed like, what? Like, what is happening? Like, is this for real? Is that him? Is he dying? What's going on? Why does he look like a shaved penis?
So I was thinking, Camila, you're on record as saying that every one of us has a 55-year-old white man inside of
him. Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Now, is it possible that the counterpoint of that you don't have a 10-year-old white boy inside of you?
Yeah, I think so.
Awful. I'm sorry.
Brazen.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. But no, I would think that would be correct, that I do not. Because if I think about any and everything that a 10-year-old white boy would enjoy, I do not enjoy it.
Right. So.
You're into comics, though, aren't
Only
you?
Only certain ones. Like, and I hate anime. Okay. Like, and it actually, like, physically makes me angry. I have a physical reaction to it, and I don't know why. No idea.
Really?
Yeah. Like, I could come into a room, and it'll be on the TV, and I'm, like, angry. And it has happened. And I don't know why. I don't understand. Anime has never done anything to me.
Never seen Camila at wrestling. All the wrestling I go to, you know, who's never there?
Yeah, exactly. Camila. Not going to be me. Not it.
Not much of the 10-year-old boy stuff. What else? I want to acknowledge two people. Dee Wallace is great.
Yeah.
How about
yeah.
a actress nominee?
She's also super cute. I don't remember her being that cute.
That haircut works for her.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm as guilty of it as anybody. People start talking about E.T. and say the word Spielberg 18 times in the next 60 seconds. Let's acknowledge the screenwriter, Melissa Matheson, who did a few Spielberg movies, a few other movies. She was kind of
a lot of Harrison Ford.
Did a lot of Harrison Ford. Hey, get it.
And apparently it was during Raiders that Spielberg was toying with this idea and worked with her to develop, you know, because she was there hanging out with her husband, Harrison Ford.
Oh, that's
there are scenes of E.T. with Harrison Ford that they won't put out. Where he's playing the teacher. Maybe not the science teacher, but a different teacher.
Interesting.
He filmed stuff. But they cut it because they thought it was, you know, Harrison Ford was big at the time and they thought it was a distraction.
So
that was something I put in my notes. Like, at the time, did it seem really cheesy that they keep referencing Star Wars? Was it like, oh, he's talking about his buddy's movie? Like, because if you did that today, I'd be like, I'd make a jerk off motion.
I don't know. I don't even think I'd noticed how many times they referenced Star Wars.
Yeah. Also, what would that do to this being in the Star Wars universe if Harrison Ford played a teacher?
A very distant descendant.
I guess.
I have a question for our listeners because I know none of you would be able to answer this question. So going back into the classroom with the dissection of the frogs and whatnot, back in my day, when we dissected frogs, they were already dead when they got to you.
Yeah, I had that in my notes as well.
Yeah.
Who gives children live frogs
and
to kill?
Yeah, and like cotton balls full of chloroform. I'm like,
no.
That's gonna make people sick. Yeah, they came dead.
Is there anybody out there who would have been in school and dissecting frogs at this time? Let me know what the situation was, please.
Yeah. Need to know.
If I'm not watching E.T., I probably don't think about the fact that I dissected a frog. And every time I'm like, oh, that was a bad day.
Ooh, yeah, the smell.
It was awesome.
We actually had to do a pig in high school.
Like, ooh,
yeah.
Yucks.
Yeah. I lasted a day, and then the next day I was like, no thanks, I'm not.
No thanks.
I will not be returning for this.
Sean, is that what your E.T. candle smells like?
Dissected
frog. Yeah. Frog and formaldehyde.
I won't.
This candle always give me headaches. That's so
it's like I light it and then I pass out. I don't know what's going on. Does it smell like chloroform to you?
No, I'm fine. What? It makes me like more. I don't know how that happens. I won't hold it up to the camera because it's a podcast, but there's on the fridge, there's two magnets. I think you can still, if you go to Florida, get photo shoots with E.T., where at one point you sit in the closet and he's dressed up like Gertie dresses.
So
we have one of those, and then we have one of Mary Beth on the bike, like pointing forward. And not only do they do these and they look great, you'll actually stand there for 5 minutes while the guy quickly Photoshops like little glow onto your fingers to really make it.
Bring it home.
It's excellent.
That's very cute.
If you were on a bike that started levitating because of E.T.'s powers, do you think you'd continue pedaling?
I had that question also in my notes.
I feel like no.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like no.
I think you would because you immediately panic. Mm-hmm. Like, do I control this or not? And you would do everything you can that your mind says this is how you keep a bike going, mm-hmm. including pedaling.
Oh, yeah. I could do that. I just feel like I would be so horrified that I would like freeze and squeeze myself around the bike.
I think I'd for dear life. Squeeze myself around the bike for dear life.
Yeah. So you're assuming I would make it to this far in our adventures with E.T. It would have been saw him out in the field.
I am bailing
right.
5 feet off,
right.
off the ground.
Not even we wouldn't even have made it that far. Saw him first contact. It's like he's out in the field. There's something out there that we need to kill immediately. I don't know what it is, but y'all take care of it. I'm going to go.
Even if you're a sidekick, they're like, we got to save him. And Camila's like, you have to save him.
Right. Right. I am fine over here minding my own business.
Well, let's rate E.T. One of the big challenges, right? You know, like we talk about with some of it's a lot easier to come up with a rating for With Honors than it is to say, what number does E.T. get? So guests first, Addie, a score out of 100, if you can.
Yeah, I think I can. You know, despite the things that I struggled with, I really did love this. It's fun. It's funny. It's heartwarming. I cried more than one time. It's just so beautifully made, and it really is a fun like family movie. So I think I'm going to give it a 90.
Very good.
Wow.
Very solid 90. Let's not bury the anchor. Let's know what the anchor will be and ask Camila. Camila, what score would you give E.T. the Extraterrestrial?
I'm going to go ahead. This movie was mostly score, musical score. And I'm going to, going in, I said 30 points are going to Drew Barrymore.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
So, a 54 is where I'm at. Because I'd be happy to never see this thing again, though.
Yeah.
And where can Twitter direct its outrage at the no, it's
at
not.
The underscore rugged angel.
That feels like see, do at me.
Like, at me. See, see what,
whenever I would do that to Cliver, he would get really mad. Like, do I need people coming at me? I'm like, hey, you're the one who said Wonder Woman like, wasn't that
yeah,
good.
I don't this is not come say what you come like, at me, son.
Yeah.
Robin.
I'm gonna go 94.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah, I think this movie, like, I really do think this movie is almost perfect.
Y'all really go hard for yeah. that alien.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We've talked about our perfect 100s. Is this
Sean's? What is happening? Are we doing it, Sean?
You know, we keep talking about it. Will it ever happen? And maybe it's because I'm sick of waiting, but and maybe it's because nothing shook me either in the viewing or in the conversation, but yeah, 100.
Holy shit snacks.
100
I don't believe it.
Wow.
This is insanity.
Wow.
I don't know what I would take away. Like, you know, I've wow. mentioned recently that, not for the show, but just when I was, as I was watching stuff like Wizard of Oz and Jurassic Park, it's like, is there anything that would keep these from being 100? And usually I have something.
Yeah.
I don't have anything.
Wow.
I'm pretty sure Elliot put a whole stake down the drain at one point. That I had a problem with, but I don't think that loses you a point. Also, I was very proud that I caught a flub in E.T. When he's showing E.T. his stuff on his table, he picks up the Coke can, revealing that the little puddle of Coke underneath it is like a glue prop.
Mm-hmm.
That's not enough to take a point away. I think it's everything that I want. You know, I said when we did the 100th episode of You Can't Handle the Truth, you know, that I want things to be either weird science fiction or horror or comedy. And this is kind of all of those.
Yeah,
and like
yeah.
own that I love. And
oh my God.
Just to ease your mind, Sean, I don't think that was a flub in production. I think that was like, I remember them selling those Coke can fake spill things.
Oh, like that was a prank.
Yeah.
That was like, a toy.
Yeah. Spencer's gifts. I remember
yeah.
those.
So you'd just, like put it on your mom's white upholstery.
Right. Yeah.
So 101. Nevertheless, we cannot even approach the top five because Camila, you know, every movie has, everyone has some movies they don't like. It's fine. It's fine. 84 and a half is the final score. Still an excellent performance. If it had been me, Robin, and Addie, wait a minute. I know what's going on here. If you had liked it, that would have been the end of Fight Club's reign after only three episodes.
Yes, that is exactly what I did there.
A Fincher defense is what
I mean,
it is.
That truly is the 55-year-old white man versus the 10-year-old white boy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you've been finched.
Someone else is going to have to take me through the bingo card because I haven't been marking it correctly. Does anyone have anything to add to the bingo card?
No.
Earth Invasion.
Huh?
Yes.
We had an invasion? Oh, shit. I totally missed.
Yep.
I am literally trying to erase this movie from my memory, actively.
I would listen to an argument that this shouldn't count as an Earth invasion because they're really collecting biological samples that only accidentally stay behind. But, like, I think it counts.
It counts.
Yeah, yeah. It counts.
And the other one that maybe is Babysitter.
Ooh, that's the problem. There ain't no babysitters.
Right, exactly. They definitely have Michael watch after the kids.
I don't call siblings babysitters.
Okay.
Siblings, if you are related by blood, you are not babysitting. You are doing your part. Or not even just like blood. Like, because I hate it when people are like, dad's babysitting.
Dad's babysitting is ridiculous.
Dad's doing what he's supposed to be doing. No.
Yeah. Dad's dadding.
Right.
Yes.
I love the relationship between these three siblings. It is just snippy enough and just abrasive enough, but you could tell that they love each other. And it when is, it's yes. important, they love each other.
Right. It's really sweet. Because the older brother really could have been just like, they could have written him as a dick and that would have just made things terrible. But, you know, he's just enough of a big brother with attitude, but still... Mm-hmm. He cares. He gives an F.
Yeah.
And shout out to very young C. Thomas Howell in the playing a background actor, sort of just like boy on bike 3. I don't know.
Right. The only C. Thomas Howell has been completely eclipsed in my memory by the movie where he pretends to be black to go to Harvard.
Yeah, Soul Man.
Yeah. Soul Man.
Like, saw that in the theater.
What other things did he do that were notable?
Outsiders.
Ah, yes. Okay.
A young man named Ponyboy.
I knew he had some kind of real career, but in my brain, it is Soul Man.
Did Soul Man ruin the rest of his career, though?
I don't know.
Did he really work after that?
I know I've seen him on television shows, and I've seen him do a lot of TV acting, and but I to be honest, I couldn't place another movie that he's done.
Yeah, I wonder if it maybe just ruined him as a leading man.
I don't think he has the chops as a leading man.
As a star.
I don't think he
Yeah, I think that Soul Man's possibly a scapegoat in that situation.
Right, yeah.
do we have a bingo? Did anybody make it?
I'm one away. I need a biopic.
Yeah, we haven't crossed off biopic, did we?
No.
And did Drew Barrymore put E.T. in high heels, and did he fall while wearing those high heels?
I don't think he fell. I think the only time he fell was with the Polaroid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was wearing those clown shoes. Yeah.
No bingos yet. No bingos. So it's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. Let's start with the guest. Addie, seen anything?
I'm rewatching Downton Abbey.
Interesting.
What did I see recently? I'm trying to think. I feel like I watched a movie recently, but it's kind of escaping me. I don't know. There's really nothing. Oh, Joe and I actually started watching This Is Pop on Netflix. It's a documentary series about pop music.
Yes, I watched two of them.
The first episode is Boys to Men.
Yes.
About the rise and fall of Boys to Men. Excellent.
Is this
second
episode behind the music coming back? Because I need that in my life.
Kind of, but it's not just about the band. It's more about the music.
Oh, okay.
There was
the
one about the Swedish.
Is about auto-tune.
Oh, yeah. I didn't really care about that one. The only one I watched was Boys to Men one and then the Swedish pop one. The Swedish invasion.
Oh,
kind of thing.
Max Martin.
That's so good.
I didn't get to that yet, but I'm excited. We only watched the first two so far, but it is, I highly recommend it. If you have any interest whatsoever in pop music, it's fascinating. The auto-tune episode blew my mind and made me hate auto-tune more.
Interesting.
As a tool for making people who can't sing sound like they can sing. I love it as an expression or a style.
Mm. Yeah.
I like that use of it, but I don't like it as a tool to be well, this person can't sing, but we're going to make it sound like they can. No, that's bullshit. Don't do that.
Right.
I have to watch this.
But I highly recommend it.
Camila?
I watched all of the Fear Streets. What was it? 94, 80? Six or something, 82 and 1666. The one that was in the 80s, loved it much more than I loved the 90s one. The 1666 was pretty good too. So, I mean, all in all, I would say all three of them it was done really well and they're very enjoyable, especially if you like horror and that's your thing. Totally watch them. They're really good. And
is this on Shudder? Where is that?
Netflix. And I watched The Wrath of Man with Jason Statham, finally, Guy Ritchie's new film.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm usually pretty much always pro Guy Ritchie. He is a director that I like to on purpose go see his films.
Mm-hmm.
And this one was really good. I feel like Guy Ritchie has matured a lot as a director. And this didn't have a lot of his usual tropes in it. Of fast editing it wasn't really super British or anything like that either. But one thing that kind of stood out and was kind of fucked up is that it's a lot of the dialogue in the beginning between some of the characters is really like homophobic. And I'm
in 2021.
Right. Yeah. And it was just, and it was jarring and like, and really upsetting. And then I started to think like, has this dialogue always been like this? And I'm missing it because I am like bedazzled by the charming British accent and like the British, and I don't know what they're saying because of most of it's British slang. And so I'm just kind of curious, like, has that always been a thread in Guy Ritchie's stuff, or is this something new that he's trying? Because if it's something new, it's like, why in 2021 and the year of our Lord and Savior, like, why are you doing this now? But aside from that, like, it's, I think that's like basically in the first act and then we move away from it. But it's a solid heist revenge film with like some really great acting from a lot of people that I don't know. Some terrible acting from Josh Hartnett. He was there for some reason. I don't know why, but I would still recommend it to watch.
Yeah, I gave it a positive review. It didn't really stick with me, but no, I enjoyed that. I have seen two of the three Fear Streets. So the third one's good. I was worried that they were going too far back.
I was worried about that too. But no, it works. They do it. So I would rate like, and my preference would be the second, the 80s one first, then 1666, and then 94.
Not to be the horror guy, but I'm just happy they actually killed a lot of people. Like when I heard they were doing Fear Street, I was like, this is going to be very like threatening, but no one, you know, we can't do any blood, we can't do, and by the middle one, the camp one, they're like, we're killing children,
we'll everybody, wow. Like, fuck it, everyone's dead and bloodied and dismembered, everything is happening.
Wow.
So the beach that makes you old, it's so bad. I
fool me once, M. Night.
I don't know what I was expecting. I don't know why I'm... Every time the trailer looks kind of good and I'm like, well, maybe he... Nope, he's still terrible. He's terrible at this. And it's... At this point, it's not just like, you know, oh, it's overindulgent and too reliant on twists and too smart and smarter than it thinks it is. He can't do dialogue or filming. He's bad at, like, the shots are weird, there's weird edits, it's jarring and inconsistent in how he does it visually. It's he gives himself a big part again, which, come on, you're not, he likes you. I don't know who to blame. I don't know if it's based on a graphic novel. I don't know if this is in the graphic novel or not, but it's like, no, don't have the six-year-olds have sex. Let's I'm happy to spoil this element of the plot because I want people to not go see the movie. That there's 2 6-year-olds and they, by in 2 hours, they grow into an adult, and then they fuck and she gets pregnant and has the baby 20 minutes later and the baby dies after a minute because it
I
just
hate him.
Do some other shit.
I
of
hate
all
him.
The shit wow. you can do on this beach, just do something else.
Why do they keep giving him money? Like, why does he keep getting the green light to do this stuff? I don't understand.
Because a lot of you, not you three, but a lot of the people in the world convinced yourself that Split was good. That is the answer. He was out and Split came out and it was bad too, but a lot of people were like, oh, he's back, because you wanted it and you lied to yourself and told yourselves it was good and now he gets money again.
I would like to, in my defense, I would just like to point out that all of my accolades for Split land on James McAvoy.
I was going to say, I think people liked James McAvoy in that movie, but by proxy, like,
it's fucked up.
Is getting,
The adult cast is, the dialogue is so bad. Like, he clearly won't even, like, get a second read on his, let alone an editor. The dialogue is so bad. And the adults look embarrassed by it. Like, Garcia Bernal and all the other adults in the film clearly look like, I'm sorry, I have to say this. The young cast is just willing to go all out. So Thomasin McKenzie's good. Eliza Scanlon is good.
How long do they get to be in the role, though? Like, do they age them with makeup and CGI and stuff? Or, like, how much of it is recasting?
That part of the cast probably has 70% of the movie. It's probably the kids for 20%, then the actors you know for 70, and some slightly older people, some middle-aged people in the last few minutes.
Okay.
There's, I can name two or three sequences that are really good, because like in his stew of bullshit, there's like a few little glimmers of knowing what's scary and knowing what, and so there's a few sequences that work, but it is mostly infuriating. Can I praise something to balance? Hey, Escape Room 2 was fine.
Okay.
If you enjoy Escape Room 1, you can do that again if you want.
Excellent.
If I remember correctly, that was in Camila's top five for the year.
Was it?
Yeah.
Wow.
For what year? And like the year that the year that I had a baby and didn't go anywhere.
Yes. Yes. Saw 10 movies. It was in the top half.
Right. But no, I mean, I do remember enjoying that movie, and I do want to see the second one.
Especially a good drive-in pick, because you know, you go and you have fun and you have to pay attention. And
plus,
you know,
if they plus if they do a third one, this young lady will, I don't know her name, but the lead actress, she'll be the first black final girl in a series, in a horror series.
Ooh, wow. Damn, it's 2021. How is that the first?
Right. Like, this is, now mind you, in a series, not just a horror film, but just like in a horror franchise.
Taylor Russell is her name, and she's good. I liked her. It is very like twist on top of twist on top of twist, which is ironic when I'm tearing apart an M. Night Shyamalan movie, but it's a matter of expectations. Yeah. One of them thinks he's making Citizen Kane, and the other knows that
like, it knows its place. It's like, we know what we're doing here.
Robin.
So Gunpowder Milkshake is... ultimately, I enjoyed watching it, but there's a joke on Family Guy, a show which I'm like contractually obligated to judge as a comedy person. But this joke has always stuck with me, where Peter says he doesn't like, I'm pretty sure it's The Godfather. And he says that movie insists upon itself. And that's such good shorthand for a certain kind of movie. Maybe one's made like M. Night Shyamalan or Guy Ritchie. Gunpowder Milkshake insists upon its motherfucking self so hard that it makes me want to hate it. And then additionally, it was very much marketed to me as older badass ladies fighting Angela Bassett, Michelle Yeoh, who have like a solid 4 minutes of screen time.
Yeah.
It is just Karen Gillan, and she's great, but she is no Angela Bassett.
So I felt
a huge bait and switch situation. At the end of the day, I still enjoyed watching it, but like, I'm mad about it.
Well, I've had high expectations. I had those expectations also. And it's like, how do you have Michelle Yeoh in this action film and not have her kick off in a bunch of people's asses?
Right. So
that was frustrating for me. And so I fell asleep. I didn't care. I didn't go back to it. Like I did. Like I woke up at some point and saw the end. And it was like, this is fine. But it like really felt it. It smelled a lot of Kill Bill. And it had some really great scenery. Like I really enjoyed the set design and all that stuff. But still, it's not what I wanted.
Exactly. There are things to like about it. There are things to hate about it. But at the end of the day, I'm going to just be mad that it isn't what I thought I was getting. And why can't I get what that is?
Right, exactly. Like if I had ordered like a chicken sandwich, like a grilled chicken sandwich, and then they gave me like tofurkey. It's like, I mean, I'll eat it, but that's not exactly what I was looking for. Oh, I'll eat it because I need the sustenance.
I also watched the new Space Jam because I like participating in cultural moments, and it's dumb, but...
But you knew what you were doing when you got
I knew what I was doing.
Does that cost any extra on HBO?
No.
Okay, I might actually watch it then. I don't want to give them my money, but...
It's worth watching for free and going, what on earth, over and over and over again. And Don Cheadle is having the time of his life, which is fun to watch.
Okay.
To talk around it for the people who are still waiting on Space Jam for some reason, the big joke cameo is brilliant.
I really like big joke cameo.
Pure joy. And for what I will vaguely call the Ready Player One sequence,
just like 90% of the film.
Well, but you know what I'm talking about. Like the very active. Yeah. People are like, oh, you're just making references. And that's when I'm like, shut up and let people have fun. Like, what are you angry that there was like cheap jokes in a Looney Tunes?
Right.
Like,
right.
This is a sequel to a Space Jam Looney Tunes film. Or is it a remake? Is it a sequel or is it a remake?
It's a sequel.
Okay.
I found it really distracting, though, during the game where it's like, ooh, what other movies can I recognize? And like that's not a strong narrative choice.
I felt that way in the first Space Jam, though, when they're in the like auditorium for the big game and like, you know, there are all these characters around. Like I was kind of like looking, like I wanted to be like pause it.
Yeah.
Like, because that also distracts me where I'm like, oh, I want to see, I mean, you know, who I can see in the crowd or whatever.
I never saw Space Jam, but that makes me think of Zoolander, where the I guess it's the big fashion show, and there's like all these different random cameos. Like I know Billy Zane is one of them, and Gavin Rossdale is one too.
Wow. They are catering heavily to Camila.
Right?
That's the first time somebody's compared Zoolander and Space Jam.
One might even say pandering.
Yes, exactly. Camila, please love this movie. There's Billy Zane, Gavin Rossdale.
Amazing.
That said, I understand, but I understand you're just pulling in recognizable IP, but Pennywise the Clown does not just stand around and watch a basketball game, okay?
Apparently, there's a character from a movie where Vanessa Redgrave plays a nun with scoliosis who masturbates with Oliver Reed's charred bones.
I'm sorry. You're going to have to give me a minute to digest that sentence.
Yeah.
You know?
It's the flying nun. I don't know.
That was a whole lot of what the fuck?
Yeah.
Boom, boom, boom. All in a row in one sentence together. What?
Well, all of that said, let's draw a movie. Breaking during the podcast, this is the first time I can recall that we've recorded on a Sunday, so it came out. Good news, Old is now on the list. Old is number one in America.
What is the veto status right now? No one has a veto, right?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
I have one, and I won't use it because I've never seen this film. I know a lot of people have very fond feelings about it, and I'm curious how it holds up in a much different era for Disney, because we've deconstructed the princess myth so thoroughly, a process that started in many ways with Enchanted. We will watch Enchanted with Amy Adams.
Oh, okay. That was cute.
Before we do that, E.T., I mean, you could just name any song from 1982 and you'd probably be right, but looking for the opening weekend, what was the number one song in America June 11th of 1982?
Was it Eye of the Tiger?
It was not.
I had to try.
Gloria? Gloria!
Good song, not correct.
82.
Diana Ross?
No.
Good, because I can't remember what that song's called.
Toto.
Not Toto, no. Many people will tell you that E.T. is about kind of cross-cultural understanding. So this is appropriate in that way.
Culture Club?
God.
Ebony and Ivory.
Oh.
Ebony and Ivory.
Wow.
You know, many times at a karaoke night at a bar, some never failed... some drunk white dude would come up to me and request to sing Ebony and Ivory with me.
No.
This is a serious thing that has happened to me.
Not broken so many jaws.
Dude, I've broken a lot of will.
I'm so upset.
Wow.
Yeah.
Drunk dudes. I mean,
I feel like we need to say some kind of joke to bring it back from that tweet.
No,
that was it. That's the tweet.
You know how E.T. looked laying in the ditch? That's the last guy that said that to me.
Thank you. That's what I was looking for.
Yeah.